business and to succeed. Monday's morning show begins just after 8.
This is WGTD HD serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, a program that's designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first Saturday of every month.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. In today's show, I'm going to talk about what you need to do to survive in 2025. And it just happens to rhyme. So I always think about in December what needs to be happening for businesses to survive the next year. And it's surprisingly an interesting mix of the same thing that would have applied for the last 20 years consistently, but there's new stuff. So that's what I'm going to talk about, is what you need to survive to do in order to survive in 2025. So let's get started with that. Survival in business comes down to being competitive, and minimum wages are going up all over the place. There's already problems with just trying to find competent talent to work. There are problems with getting employees to follow policies. And it seems to be pretty pervasive across organizations that leaders also struggle with making policies and enforcing policies. Something as simple as establishing a cultural shift policy that says we're going to mandate all staff do at least 1 hour of, I should say at least 15 minutes up to 1 hour of training per week. All right. So that simple thing, if you asked me what was what are the two most important things that every single business that's out there can do to become more profitable, to be more profitable, and to be competitive in 2025? It's really going to be two things. First, you really need to have a quality CTO, a chief technology officer that you have an ongoing relationship with. Doesn't mean that person has to be a full-time internal employee. Could be somebody that you have a fractional or a virtual sort of relationship with. So if you want to have them as a part-time employee, go right ahead with that. But you can just also find experts like myself to partner with for a set number of hours per month to help you with these issues. So that's the number one thing. Is you need to get leadership input and guidance that can streamline and rocket ship you to the ability to execute on a strategy that will have known good, highly effective, profitable, high ROI outcomes. The second thing is you have to do a cultural shift. The cultural shift is towards an attitude and an enforcement mechanism of training. Your staff, I don't care their age, it's irrelevant. If you think, I have a young workforce and young workforce knows. No, they don't. They don't know any more about AI or how to use Excel or Word or how to comply with your policies any better than somebody who's a baby boomer. They don't know. The problem is that the younger generation oftentimes thinks they know, and so they're even less compliant, because your baby boomers will say, hey, I'm wise and I'm older and I'm mature and I recognize the fact that maybe I don't know everything, so I'm going to look at the company policy and read that and go through the training, and then I'm going to try to conduct myself in accordance with the company policy. You can't necessarily say that that kind of an attitude is as widely adopted in the younger generations as it is in the older generations. So don't think that having a younger workforce solves the problem. So you need a CTO that is going to be able to sit down with the executive management team and who's going to be able to tell them, all right, this is how we do it. This is the right mix of human things, and then this is the right mix of technical things, right? So systems, technology, processes, policies. Are we using AI? Are we shifting towards software as a service? And then that CTO is going to be who you need in order to even vet platforms. Even just as recently as yesterday, I had a conversation with another business leader who was out there on their own trying to come up with a platform to fulfill a need. And they'd probably wasted 15 to 20 hours and still were not coming up with an effective answer. Well, they talked to me and I had a solution for them in 5 minutes. Well-known, well-vetted, tested, highly known, functional, and very cost-effective. So it's like, if you are not finding budget to talk to your CTO, all you're doing is lighting money on fire, truly. Because what I can tell you, what I can shortcut for you, you won't be able to get done in hundreds of hours. So again, you have got to also be moving your culture of your company to one where ongoing training is a mandatory piece. If you don't have policies and then you don't have a mechanism for staff to refer to the policies all the time and make it convenient for them and hold them accountable to the policies. And I don't mean silly paper things with people physically signing things. Like, that's not a policy system. You're not moving the cultural needle of your organization. You have to come at this from a squeeze position. One side of the squeeze is, we're making all this training available to you. You can do it on demand and you can do it when is convenient for you, but you have to do it. And then the other side of the squeeze is, we're now going to evaluate your performance as an employee against this additional training component as a metric. And for those of you that are like, oh, well, we do the annual training, straight up, you're deluding yourself if you think that that's moving the needle of risk reduction or productivity improvement or profitability improvement or simply more efficiently using the inventory that's in your organization. Your payroll is your inventory. Regardless of what type of an organization you are, you have payroll. And that payroll is your primary inventory. When that payroll is not efficiently utilized, it's just, you're lighting money on fire. Absolutely. Quick little story. Had a scenario where I had provided oodles of training. It was very curated. It was very strategic and tactical, very accessible. A thing that had there simply been an enforced policy and a manager advocated cultural shift in an organization, the staff could have taken just 15 minutes at the end of the day, let's say 2-3 times a week, and would have 100% moved the needle on their problem. But because that didn't happen, they had a bunch of support questions and they weren't using the technology effectively, even at a basic level, because they just literally wouldn't read the instruction. They just literally wouldn't take the time to read an 8-page guide, an 8-page curated, here's how you most efficiently use this technological system. You know, here's your tips and tricks. And why didn't they do that? Well, they didn't do it because their manager told them that training wasn't important and that they didn't have to do that. Instead, their manager told them that everything else is secondary to sales. So if you're telling your staff that everything else is secondary to sales, and you're not telling them that actually we also have to respect our employer, we have to respect our coworkers. In order to do that, we have to comply with company policies. And we also have to be efficient users of the technology that the company has provided us. So we have to understand what are best practices, efficient utilization of that technology. How do we make sure we know what to do with it so that we're not feeling like we have roadblocks or that we're putting in tech support requests? And worse yet, oftentimes staff will dig holes, and they dig holes not only for themselves, but they dig holes for the company that then engineers, IT systems engineers, must unwind. It is infinitely less expensive to simply have your staff do the work correctly to begin with, instead of they create some ginormous issue that can only be resolved by having somebody like myself unwind the mess. Okay, so now let's throw artificial intelligence in there. 2025, if you don't have data classification plan, data retention plan, if you haven't implemented policies, a policy management system, if you have not boosted the operational maturity of your company, and if you don't have systems in place that are going to enable and facilitate the implementation of the security controls that need to be around the AI usage and adoption, coupled with the empowerment of the staff to know how to use AI properly and what not to do with it. So you need a combination of policies, training, technical control, and accountability. Those are the four pillars right there. You have to have policy. You're going to drive accountability, or you're going to be able to say these are our standards. That's what a policy does. It gets everybody on the same page. Then you have to have the technical controls to go with that. You have to train the people. And then you have to actually have accountability. How you do accountability is variable, but fundamentally it has to be there. If people are not held accountable, well, then there's no consequences for being completely flying in the face of what should be done. There's no consequences for just intentionally doing something incorrectly. Yeah. This is what has to happen in 2025 if you're going to be successful, if you're going to remain competitive. It's now to the state where, so even let's say 4 years ago, I was of the opinion that marketing agencies were completely unable to execute on effective marketing services. And the core primary reason for that is because they lacked the really deep technical aptitude and the security capabilities. And their core reason is because they refused to hire somebody like me. In fact, I encountered probably about 20 marketing agencies in the last 4 years who absolutely matched that. They had no one on staff that was a qualified CISO or CTO. They had no one in terms of a fractional relationship who was a qualified CTO or CISO. And as such, their security was horrendously bad. Their practices were bad, and they also lacked, they themselves were not getting the right technical training to be able to be competitive. And so they were losing business left, right, and sideways because of it. So they're losing business because of really two reasons. One, they're not able to execute on a marketing strategy that's effective because they're not competitive anymore. They're not using AI properly. They don't have the right security practices in place. The second main reason why they were losing business is because of failing vendor risk assessments. And interestingly, the same exact thing I've seen be happening with law firms, accounting firms, tax prep firms, medical offices, dental offices. I've even seen it with like investment brokerages, like financial, high net worth individual financial management services organization. Now, the reason that I know about these things is because one of the services that we do at QPC is we do vendor risk assessments and counterparty risk assessments for people. And these range anywhere from like $300 and up, okay, based upon the complexity of what is being requested. But a baseline, you know, just an initial pass-fail is $300. And I'm able to tell, utilizing public-facing information, whether it's even worth pursuing investigating a relationship with that vendor further. And frequently, organizations completely and outright utterly fail on a basic vendor risk assessment. When you see a vendor completely fail on an external public-facing information vendor risk assessment, what's being found is egregious things that are used as a proxy to predict what is happening in the rest of the information technology of that organization. So when you see a securities poop show that is in the public facing scenario of an organization, then you can very reasonably use that as a proxy to predict what else is going on there that isn't working, you know, that isn't being done competently. And I've been saying this for decades, and it's so salient today as well. I continue to encounter abundant examples where the size of the organization has no correlation whatsoever to competency. None. I know of 70-person MSPs, so IT service providers, who are incompetent. And when you look at some of the things that they're doing for their customers, and you look at the fact that they have 70 employees, and there's not a single person in that entire company that can sense or understand that this public-facing security risk that they manufactured for their managed customers is even a problem. So 70 people can't even figure out that it's a problem. That should be telling you that everything else that company is doing is horrendous. Because if the collective intelligence of 70 people can't equal the intelligence of one person who's doing the vendor risk assessment, then that doesn't bode well for the capabilities of that 70-person company. And this isn't just about IT service providers. I could tell you about 1,000-person companies where there's not a single person employed or engaged at a professional level that's associated with that organization that has adequate competency with regards to information technology. I mean, they're just like stumbling through life, and I see the executive management teams rarely ever having any interest in having a second opinion about anything. And certainly not a second opinion that is going to make them feel uncomfortable. what they have a massive bias towards is they want to surround themselves with information technology people who are yes men, who just tell them what they want to hear. And what they always want to hear is that everything's okay. But then they also want to reserve the right to freak out when something blows up and it's found to not actually be okay. Okay. So this is why in 2025, if you're going to be competitive, you really have to have some deep paradigm shifts. The only paradigm that I've seen work universally across all organizations, regardless of size, regardless of time, regardless of industry, is this. You have to maintain a risk register. You have to maintain a project backlog. And you have to have an organizational commitment to allocating time and budget to working on the project backlog and the risk register every single month. Now, the way that we do this with clients is I request, and I really strongly recommend, that they designate me as their CTO and CISO. So now they have access to that highly qualified technology executive leadership. And then I maintain that risk register and I maintain that project backlog in a collaborative fashion with the leadership of that organization. But the leadership of that organization must then do a few things. Number one, they have to actually attend meetings, right? You have to make time in your schedule to talk to your advisor. Do you make time to talk to your CPA? Do you make time to talk to your lawyer? If you don't, you probably should, okay? So you have to make time for those meetings. Those meetings are very important. Quarterly at least, and monthly is better, but quarterly at a minimum. And you should in January be having the 2025 planning meeting. What are we going to do in 2025? What are our big initiatives? Let's get everybody on the same page. Let's have a documented system for this. And then you decide how you want to try and boil that ocean. I know some organizations want to try and boil the ocean and say, well, we can't do anything unless we have some sort of a comprehensive budget. Okay, well, guess what? You're going to have to pay to have an engineering plan done and then have that come into an estimated budget. There's no way to get a guaranteed budget. A better approach is ask your CTO for a swag number and they'll give you a swag number. And then you just need to allocate that budget on a monthly basis and say, all right, well, our goal each month is to do at least this amount of work towards addressing issues on the project backlog and addressing issues on the risk register. So we're going to have meetings about it and we're going to work as a team. So this isn't just something that you say, okay, I'm going to fund this, and then you lob the grenade over the wall at your service provider. This doesn't work that way. You don't do that with your attorney and you don't do that with your tax preparer, I hope. Hope you don't do that with your CPA firm, right? You can't just like delegate and abdicate. That's a recipe for disaster. And I've seen all kinds of organizations do that and it always ends up harming them. Their profitability suffers. They rarely end up resolving issues and there's usually just angst and frustration out of it. But it does require an executive management team who is willing to do the hard work of, at a minimum, having meetings and reading some documents so they can be informed risk decision makers. Doesn't mean you need to become an expert in whatever it is that you're having meetings about, but it does mean you have to be willing to have those meetings and have those discussions. I mean, just as recently as yesterday, I had a client who had a long-term outstanding problem that finally got resolved. The reason that it finally got resolved was because the CEO of the organization was finally willing to take the time to have a one-hour phone call with me. That was all it took. And blammo, problems are solved. But the prior approaches of like, oh, well, I'm too important for those meetings. I'm not going to have a conversation with, you know, other than I got sales to do, or I got, you know, what I like too important to, they're too important to make the time to have meetings about, you know, long outstanding issues, right? Which is exactly what a project backlog is. It's exactly what a risk register is. Okay. And they rely entirely too heavily on middle people. So like, oh, well, I'll have my, you know, so-and-so take care of that for me. So they're delegating and abdicating. But the problem is whoever they've delegated it to can't make that strategic decision. They're not the risk owner. The executive management team is the risk owner. And there were these light bulb aha moments that happened in that phone call for my client CEO. And it was, and you know, I mean, he was so having his eyes opened that he was so smart about it that he came to the realization like, oh, okay, we've procured a bunch of things that we probably shouldn't have procured because we didn't have a policy in place for that factor that proactively managed that risk. I mean, the easiest way to manage risk is you look at it and you say, these are the things I'm not going to buy. But you need to be smart about that. You know, you can't say, well, I'm going to manage risk by just not buying any printers. Like, that's not a strategy. You have to be able to print. So the way that you manage that risk around something like that is you say, well, what are our standards for printers? What are our requirements for printers? So you create a policy and a standard about printing technologies. Maybe you say, well, we're always going to have a printer that has a scanner in it because we do so much scanning and because we really don't want to be having all of the expenses of paper and toner, but you know, we know that we still need to be able to print occasionally, right? I'm giving you a simple example here. In the case of that client, it was actually a discussion about wireless interference, and they were having some reliability challenges with their wireless. And what had actually been a factor is that they had procured a bunch of technology that was just driving conflicting signals. And there was neighbor interference, co-channel interference. There's, you know, all kinds of problems that were happening because of a lack of a policy around the adoption of wireless technologies. You know, most people don't realize that Bluetooth is a wireless technology as well. You know, there's 900 megahertz frequencies that are also potentially going to have interference problems. The density of the area that you're in is a factor. And the vast majority of wireless access point technology that's out there literally does not have enough sophistication to provide information technology people visibility to what's really going on. You have to use enterprise grade technology for that. You know, so that can add to the costs of troubleshooting. So just, you know, recapping this, if you're not really driving towards operational maturity in 2025, and the only way that you're going to get there is to have a partnership with a CTO that can help you. If you're not doing that and not consistently, monthly, all staff working on your open issues, you're probably not going to be competitive by the end of 2025 or sometime during 2025. Everything now that I'm seeing is you either need to make this cultural shift in your organization, including how the executive leadership conducts themselves, and you have to have the right adoption of AI and avoid the wrong adoption of AI. And then you have to have the technical controls to go with that. If you don't get those things done in 2025, by the end of 2025, you might just be out of business.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show airs the first Saturday of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, Go to her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.
Be sure to join us this